you're on the front porch. On this week's Front Porch, we're going to talk about guns and Trump. What's the correlation? We'll also discuss whether or not the State School Board of Education should make the final decision on local school consolidations. And finally, the death of Tom Petty. He's been a big impact in all three of our lives. The Front Porch is brought to you by the Charleston Gazette Mail with a CGM app delivering the latest in news, traffic, and weather. Check it out at iTunes or Google Play. I'm Scott Finn, Grand Poobah of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined as always by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And Lori Lynn, our conservative columnist and lawyer. Hey.
Hi, Scott.
Lori, you found an interesting graphic about guns and Trump voters. What's the correlation there?
Yeah, I thought this was such a cool graphic. So if you look at the entire country and how households with guns and without guns voted in the 2016 election, in 48 of the 50 states, whether or not your household owned guns was a really good predictor of who you voted for. You know, obviously guns, Trump, not guns, Hillary Clinton. Except for two states. In Vermont, even the gun owners tended to vote for Hillary Clinton. So there, you know, you have like even the hippies own guns. Then here in West Virginia, it was the reverse of that. Even the households that didn't own guns, the majority of those voted for Donald Trump.
So that's a really interesting anomaly. In addition, the whole issue, it seems to suggest to me, Rick, that people are voting on these cultural issues maybe even more so than they are on just sheer economics. What do you think?
I'd say that's the understatement of the year, Scott.
Well, what about that? I mean, what's going on with the assumption that I think a lot of people on the left have, that it's all about the economy and economic fairness, that that's going to bring the Democrats back? I don't know. This seems to say that people are voting on these other issues like guns.
I think there's a lot of evidence for that. And, you know, there's certain chords that you can play on that people respond to. And, I mean, that's one of them. I mean, there are plenty of others.
Well, so, Rick, let me ask you, though. Do you think the Democrats are wrong as a policy matter or politically foolish to play these chords of gun control? I mean, we see every time there's a tragedy like this, Democrats talk about how we need to do something, we need to have common sense gun control, sort of unclear what they mean by that. And then you see, you know, a spike in people running out and getting guns. So are they doing it wrong? Should they be doing it differently?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I do think in West Virginia, generally, I mean, let's start with the basics. Most people who own firearms do it for hunting or for self-defense, you know, and that's one thing I think most people don't have an issue with. On the other hand, there are some things out there that are just made for killing a whole bunch of people at one time. That's the issue that I think there's been some reluctance to deal with. I do think sometimes you're leading on that. I mean, it could be a political liability if that's your main thing or the only thing you go for.
But you're obviously, you know, pretty far to the left, but you're also really comfortable with guns. You have guns, you understand guns, you're not, you know, you're not kind of like standing on a stool and saying, eek, 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 it's a gun.
Right.
And so many.
That would be my wife.
Well, and it's me in a way. I mean, I'm very uncomfortable with guns. But so many of my, you know, more liberal friends, it's almost like, you know, if there were a gun in my house, I couldn't sleep at night kind of attitude. And that, I think, is so off-putting to people in places like West Virginia where generally people are just a lot more comfortable with guns.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, this goes back to our discussions about class, right? Bringing this back to Donald Trump, the fact that Donald Trump came here, said basically, I see you. Of course, he's a billionaire from New York City. I mean, you know, culturally, he's not of West Virginia, but West Virginians are so appreciative of someone who came and said, I'm with you. And it's not like Hillary Clinton didn't try to do that, but she just couldn't communicate the same level of, I think, I see you, I'm with you, for some reason.
So one thing I think you got to be careful about essentializing this and making it about Trump is that West Virginians have owned guns forever, including when we were a solidly, overwhelmingly Democratic state. So, you know, that's more a constant than a variable.
Maybe the thing that's changed is that gun ownership has become a partisan political issue over the last 20 or 30 years.
I will have to say Obama forgot to take mine.
He tried. He just couldn't get it done because of the Republican Congress.
Is that it? Okay. We ran out the clock on that. Dodge that bullet, metaphorically speaking, huh? And there's even a study, I think, that looked at the Boston Marathon bombing. And you know the people who were just glued to the TV you know, at every minute, probably experience as much acute stress or more as people who are much closer to the situation. So, you know, when something like this breaks, if you're just glued to it, you're probably going to, at least initially, there's going to be a lot of inaccurate information. Mm-hmm. Be careful of things on social media. This is the time when people do the, you know, the photoshopping and the hoaxes. I remember after 9/11, a rumor started that, you know, Muslim doctors at CAMC went around giving a high five, which was just garbage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, that's the kind of garbage that gets people killed. And I mean, on social media, I saw someone blame Las Vegas on Obama.
Part of the problem is that people are jumping. They need to know right away. People don't have, they don't wait any longer. And they want to know within 10 minutes of a shooting like this, what's the motivation? And Lord, we might never know the motivation, but, you know, people want to put it in a category and then use it to their own political ends. You know, oh, he's Muslim. Well, therefore, it's terrorism. Oh, no, he's a white supremacist. So I find it depressing that people want to just make it one more partisan point that they use to score things.
I think
social media makes that easier. Yeah. It versus if we're all just watching TV in our houses, when we're on Twitter retweeting, then it's much easier to kind of inject that partisanship into it right away.
I think there's something called a narrative fallacy, which means that we make up stories about why things happen all the time. And that has nothing to do often with why they really happen. So what's the story? You know, it's almost something we're wired to do. And it probably was a useful adaptation, but it's, you know, because we make up a story that sounds good, has nothing to do with whether there's anything to it or not.
Yes, I love that narrative fallacy. I mean, this is both what makes humans so great, but also is so dangerous, is that we can construct the story that we need to construct to justify whatever we want to justify. We have that power, and sometimes we don't even know that we're doing it. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss school consolidation in Nicholas County, West Virginia. Basically, who's in charge of making that decision? Is it the county school board or the state school board? And we'll also talk about Tom Petty. He had an impact on all three of our lives, and we'll discuss some of his songs and how they touched us. But first,
I'm Sarah Brown from Charleston. A lot of people in politics certainly want to control their own message, and so they're giving you their talking points, and it takes a really quality reporter to be able to say, what about this? What about that? I don't think that's true. This is the example I have. And public broadcasting reporters do that. They push their subjects to be able to really flesh out what the real situation is.
Protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Go to wvpublic.org.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to discuss school consolidation. Who decides? The state level, the county level? There is an ongoing legal battle. Right now it's in the state Supreme Court here about whether Nicholas County should get to choose to close down schools in Richwood, West Virginia. Richwood was flooded out in 2016. Its high school and middle school were destroyed. You know, Nicholas County wants to close them and move all the kids to a new consolidated school in the center of the county near Summersville.
I've looked at a lot of comments on social media on this, and that seems to be one thing that keeps coming up, is the folks in Richwood feel like their community was the one that was affected by this disaster. And then as a result of that, this FEMA money is coming in, and these other people in parts of the county that weren't affected by the disaster are going to now be profiting from that, in the sense that the money is going to be building a new, nicer school, but the folks in Richwood aren't going to have their school, which they love and feel like it's the heart of their community. So they kind of feel like our misfortune got the county this money, but it's now then going to hurt us. That's a theme that keeps coming up.
Richwood folks don't want that. And the county school board voted to consolidate. The state school board has to approve this at some level. That's part of the fight. And the state school board rejected the consolidation, and now they're at the state Supreme Court. They had arguments the other day. Lori, what's going on here legally?
Well, the broad issue is really just who decides, specifically in the case of consolidation, because there is a state board policy. But in general, it's a more philosophical question about, you know, who gets to make decisions, the local boards or the state board. And, you know, each side is kind of saying, well, if you get to decide, then what role am I playing? If the state board can just reverse any decision the Nicholas County Board makes. Well, they said, well, you know, what power do we really have? And then the state board says, well, if we just have to rubber stamp everything you do, then what power do we have? But, you know, in this particular case, it did sound like the justices were, at least the ones who were very vocal, were a little bit more sympathetic to the state board's arguments.
Because of a variety of things that you, Rick, have talked about before with our Constitution and our history, there's a tremendous amount of state centralization and control that doesn't necessarily exist in other states. West Virginia School Board has the power to take over a county school system that it feels is not performing its job properly and has done so
many times. Some counties more than once, right?
Some counties more than once. It's like they didn't fix it the first time. They had to go back in again. On one hand, I think there's a good argument for that. When you see a county school board, for example, that's crippled by corruption and it doesn't seem to be able to fix itself and the kids are really getting screwed, that makes sense. On the other hand, is having the state swoop in and take over, is that really fixing things? I mean, and does it even have the right to? It's an unelected body coming in and taking over from an elected county school board. So that's part of the same set of issues. Why is power so consolidated at the state level in West Virginia, Rick? What's like the history and the reasoning for that?
Well, I mean, I don't know how strictly this affects school funding, but the constitutional amendment limiting property taxes, which was passed for what, around 1928, around the time right before the Great Depression, limits the ability of local governments to do a lot of taxing, so that a sort of one consequence has been a sort of centralized state. Now, in Vermont, for example, they actually have town meetings where they actually fund schools, so a lot of the funding really is truly local. And in West Virginia, a lot of it really is from the, you know, from the state. And so and then it leads to these really interesting questions. Like, you could have a really corrupt county system where you could have a totally out of touch state bureaucracy. I mean, think about the South during the civil rights movement. You had, you know, they would never by themselves probably have undone some of the legal segregation without some intervention from outside.
So maybe it's not a question of either or, either local control or state intervention, but maybe it's a question of how.
I think mediation, we should, as an attorney, isn't that a growing trend in that? I mean, I think we could use more of that in these kind of disputes.
Yeah, it's really hard to do that in this case. What I would love to see is for the legislature to re-examine the issue of consolidation in particular. I mean, they've certainly done this in the past, but it's been a while since they've touched it, and it's politically difficult, and I could see why they don't want to touch it. But the legislature could really provide some more guidelines, you know, both for local boards and for the state boards, and, you know, and also, we should say, they could provide some more money for places like Richwood and situations like that where I'm a conservative. I don't like to talk about more spending, but to me, that is one area where if you can keep a school open versus consolidating, you can really preserve a community. And in a state where people are constantly leaving, and, you know, I even see this, like I said, on social media. I won't live in Richwood anymore if that school closes. I live here because of this great school that my kids go to, that I went to, that we love, that I can walk to. I'm not going to have any reason to stay here if the school closes. So, I would love to see the legislature take it up.
I agree. I mean, that's something that was, I mean, I think that's an issue that probably people across political divides agree on. Consolidation's never been really popular here. It's been kind of forced on schools. Scott, you studied that.
Yeah, and there are lots of issues. I think at the end of the day, what gets lost is what's best for the individual student. In a larger school, especially for older students, high school students, there is the possibility of more specialized courses that might help them. That's true. But it's only true if they actually follow through and provide the courses they promised. And that doesn't always happen. So if you're going to make a promise to kids that they're going to get a better curriculum, you better deliver on it. But then number two is all that's negated if the kid's on the bus for 2 to 3 hours a day. That's too much. The kid doesn't have the time to be able to do extracurriculars. It's exhausting for the child, and it's too much of a damage to that kid. And so what I would argue is that there are guidelines in state law. They're not hard and fast about how long kids should be on the bus. I think they need to look at those. That should be part of the conversation. How far is too far? Every kid, I don't care if they live on the most distant hill or holler, every kid deserves to have a decent education. And you're not getting that if you're on the bus for 3 hours a day. Okay, well, finally, Tom Petty passed away, 66. It's one of those things where he wasn't my favorite artist in the universe. And yet when I look back and you start hearing all the songs over 30 years, for a Gen Xer like me, he's like just the background music of my life. And Lori, you said that you didn't even know that he was a member of the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah,
right?
So that's one of my favorite songs, Handle With Care. I love that song. And I knew that was kind of like an amalgamation of, I think it's George Harrison.
Dylan and Orbison and the guy from
But I didn't realize Tom Petty was one of them. So I'm going to go today and listen and see if I can pick out his voice and which one it is.
Everybody's got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream.
What about Handle With Care that do you like? What,
I don't know. It's just this really catchy melody. And, you know, if you listen to the lyrics, it's about kind of a guy who's, you know, had his heart broken. And he's been kind of kicked around and beat up. And he's telling, you know, the new partner, handle me with care. I just think it's a really good song.
That's cool. One of my favorite songs. And when I decided to learn to play guitar, it's because I wanted to play that song. So we have Kumbaya moment across the aisle, although that's not my favorite Tom Petty song.
I wish
you had your guitar right now.
I'm really bad, just so you know, but my favorite audience is an empty room. But
I know it's a little cliche. It's one of his really well-known songs, but I love I Won't Back Down. Where I like to be liked, and yet I find myself in jobs where I often have to do unpopular things. And it's good to be reminded that there is a time when you need to be resolute. You just need to get that backbone. And man, that song gives you that sort of feeling like, I can do this. I won't back down. So, Rick, what's your favorite Tom Petty song?
You know, if you try to do what you can to fight for people who are disadvantaged, it is a long thing. It takes a long time. And the waiting is the hardest part. For real, I quote that all the time. I mean, in a lot of the things I've been involved in, and you know, you talk to other people, like they talk about in the military, it's mostly boredom and punctuated by terror, you know, and some it's that period of waiting. It's just, if you don't have the discipline to wait, you probably cannot get a lot done.
Boy, that waiting thing, you know, talking about waiting to figure out what the true motives are of a shooter. You know, a mass shooter in Las Vegas, you know, waiting. It's something that we've kind of lost, I think, over the last couple generations.
Well, even Tom Petty's death is a good example of not listening to the first report.
Right.
I mean, there was, oh, Tom Petty has died, and then, oh, wait, maybe he hasn't died. And there were several hours of this weird, you know, back and forth. I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world, but it certainly shows how, you know, maybe be wary of the first, you know, thing you see come across Twitter.
And just waiting till things are clear, till there's an opening to move forward, till things are in place. I mean, it really is the hardest part. And in terms of a quote, it reminds me of a line from the Tao Te Ching, an ancient Chinese classic. Who can wait while muddy water settles?
What's that mean?
Sometimes you gotta suck it up and wait till things are clear, you know.
And muddy water settling, that refers back into Richwood again.
This
is that's a really great quote, Rick, to tie all of our pieces together.
There you go. Just came to me.
We don't pay you enough here.
That's true.
We don't pay you anything. This is Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, wrapping it all up in a nice little bow. And as always, thank you, Lori Lynn, for your legal and other insights. And I'm Scott Finn. Thanks for listening.